about someone who didn't receive the exercise for the first time?
Maybe, I think
we lost some this video. So, yeah. As I said, it doesn't count, but yeah. Since you worked on it, I decided to do it.
The problem is that two of us didn't really have a computer science background.
What is your one? Physics is.
And we are here for trying hard. But probably not hard enough. Anyway.
I mean, this is not what the exercise is for. If you have troubles, let's just resolve them down. Let's do something similar. Let's consider the question that you didn't understand the issues.
But actually, the issues he had are
two massive
ones.
Yeah, well, still, I don't know.
How many time do you expect us to spend on one exercise sheet?
On one exercise sheet? I mean, like, not in hours. Several hours, I would say. 2 hours, maybe. Is it too much?
Yeah, it's more like. It's more like 2 days.
No, 2 hours, I think 2 days. Okay. This is what happens in reality.
Yes.
So, what's the problem? I'm wondering.
For me, the problem is what, for example, is exactly the, or what does these semantic brackets exactly mean? I looked everywhere, but I didn't find.
But I published page on it.
What does this mean? Only this, and this, there's a rule in there, and you put it on the context.
You just take one, the match with the left hand side, you write it to the right hand side. I mean, okay, that's one thing.
Really fundamental stuff that I don't know, probably.
I mean, we're going to do it now, okay? But first I want to gather your exercises and see what we will proceed. So, and you want this?
Yeah. Yes.
You've seen the how it worked with the first exercise, where there was this lemma which no one proved, and asked Paul to do it, and he just did it from scratch in 10 minutes. So that was one. He was not here, but the others were there, right? So. He didn't prepare, but he just went to the board. That's how I expect it's going to be made. So that was about this first exercise with this equivalence of called by Vary and called by Nitter, this lemma about their equivalence from the first assignment, first exercise.
Yes,
so how much it took?
I didn't prove the lemma because.
You didn't prove the lemma, but you proved the rest, right?
Yeah. I think that was much easier than this.
Okay. And so you say this one is more difficult. And what's the most difficult part of this? This the second one?
Probably so. Yeah.
Yes. So let's just do it. Maybe you can try it.
Well, I could. I also have some ideas.
Did someone print out this auxiliary sheet, which was PCF semantic, which I put on the web page? No?
I think I got it somehow in my folder.
And by the way, I take the first. So it may contain
Okay, so then, yeah, but that's the one which I published, which I revised and corrected, and then
I corrected. Yes.
So the most recent error that Paul found was this one.
But the curves, those some errors that I've seen the most recent version.
Yeah, there's some errors.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but I really don't know. The question was to prove that U is equal to the let statement, F is H, and let X is U in F applied. And therefore, three things were given. The first one was that to prove that U equals let F. And therefore, I have the idea to replace.
So is there is an intuitive meaning of this here? Is it just some equation for you which makes no sense, or you understand
why? Actually, it kind of makes no sense, but I think this means that F becomes the same as H is, but as a function. That even if you give it a pointed type, returns a non-pointed type, because this let was defined this stuff. done and stuff.
Does this make sense to someone? So could someone comment on this equation?
Exactly.
Right, what's the intuition about? I mean, it's not just some nonsensical equation, it's some property, right?
Yes, somehow sums up the property of the fixed point combination.
Yeah.
So it says something like it says something like YP equals to P of YP.
Yeah, roughly, yes, but
it's a tie point, I think, because.
No.
Not?
Also, I mean, especially the terms of the semantics. I mean, it's kind of spelled out that this U is indeed a fixed one.
Yeah, because so because this, U is the semantic, so the brackets means you can read all this. So when you say f is equal brackets of p, that means f is the semantics of p. So you're, you can say it in words. And when you say an arrow, you say h evaluates to f. So this all can be like, you can make a sentence out of this equation. And yeah,
so.
So what this equation says is if you have a fixed point, which is, so h is, no, u is the semantic of fixed point. So this is your fixed point, right?
Yeah.
And u is the semantic of it. So the equation says the semantics of a fixed point, to calculate it, you need to run the semantics of the argument of the fixed point, so h is the semantics of p, and p was the argument of y. So it's like a loop, recursion loop,
yeah.
And this is the body of the loop. So to calculate the loop, you need to run the body once, then you need to run the loop itself again, and then you apply the first to the second. Because this is unfolding, like
this means executing it.
Yes, you can really run it like evaluate or execute.
I think the important part is just is that we see if it diverges. If it does, then the whole thing diverges. If not, then we get the result in
the end. Yeah, exactly. So like you cannot just write.
So
you cannot just write something like f of u, which probably would be easier to understand for you, because you first need to examine if it doesn't diverge, and so if the argument doesn't diverge, if the loop doesn't diverge, then you can apply one to the other. So you cannot directly form this thing.
Yeah.
You first need to like run it and to name it, and then you use what you've got as values. Because at each program can diverge, and we don't want it. So that's why we use this let constructors to check it.
Okay.
And what so does the intuition mean?
What does exactly this means? It means there's a domain gamma with the fixed point combinator of P, which is of type A to B. How can I apply this statement to that area?
Wow, so there's a context which is like a global set of arguments. So every program depends on some variables, and this role provides the initial values for them.
The point is that semantically you get a function that maps from a context to
another
interpretation of the term. And that means that you have to supply some variable assignments for the variables in the context. You have the semantics of context, v dash, something means a function from a product, right? To something, and then we put some product in which assigns values to all the variables in the class.
Okay. Yeah.
And get something out then. Does that make sense?
Not really. I mean,
you can consider example like this. Like max of type x, y of type y, x plus y. So this is the context, this is a program. Okay, let's say it's not, because these are two natural numbers, right?
Yeah.
And the result of the sum is also a natural number. So this is a term like the ones over there.
Yeah.
So this is my gamma, this is my, say, a. And I need my variables on this side because this function is not a closed term, it depends on x and y, and they are inverted there. So when I, but this is just a syntactic construction.
Well, it just when shows which type and the result is. If you use a function, okay.
So when I put this semantic bracket around, I calculate the meaning of this term, which means that I obtain a function of the form not. Times not to not bottom. So that's the definition that that I provided. If you look at them, then the type which is calculated here will be this one, because this is the type of the function which this term calculates. It takes two arguments, x and y, and produces a number. And if you look at the at this function, which is the function which you obtain by calling the semantic bracket, that's net times net to not divergence. Why divergence? Because we are always assuming that everything can diverge. So you see this cannot diverge, of course, but for typing reason, you assume that every program can diverge.
Yeah. Okay. So this is actually only the same. It should be this, then it's the same like the second assumption.
You mean that semantics doesn't differ from
what is known? I don't know. By other two ways.
It does differ because there is no bottom here.
Okay.
There is a bottom here. So
the point is that the right thing, the right hand side is the type of the left hand side.
Okay. So yeah, it's the same if you write. Plus 4, 27, like this.
No.
You can. Okay.
Because if you would replace equals 7 by column net, then it would be right. The right hand side is just the type of the left hand side. The left hand side is some kind of expression,
okay.
A function in particular, and the right hand side is a type.
Okay, so this is a combination of type and operator usage.
I don't know. I mean, you have a term that where types occur.
Yeah.
But by applying these semantic brackets, you take this term and create a function, some kind of mathematical domain.
Okay.
What is inside the brackets is a term. It's a text.
Yeah.
And the semantic brackets, they turn into meanings. So if you have x plus y, it's just a term. X plus y, they are symbols. They have no meaning.
Okay.
When you put the semantic bracket around, and then you get the some function over some domain, over CPUs. So we do it over CPUs, but we could interpret it elsewhere.
Yeah.
This semantic bracket, they say what the meaning of these things inside of them is. And how you find this meaning, you just use the rules that I provided. You do by induction, and for every term, because it has some complexity, you reduce the meaning of a complex term to meanings of the smaller term. If you do it by induction, eventually you find you finish.
That makes sense, because for me it was kind of strange that there are only types in there, and how can there be a semantic of only types and not of function, for example, 3 plus or 8 plus b is like equals to whatever 8 plus b is.
X plus, plus y is a term itself.
Yeah, this is the term, and if a compiler knows this rule, for example, then it only knows what the type of x plus y would be, and not what the result of x plus y is. Or does it know what?
Well, the compiler does all this work for you. It doesn't distinguish between the text and this is hidden there. You cannot see it when you write a program because the compiler does this work. It doesn't have an explicit brackets or so. So when you run your program, essentially this is what happens in the background. It applies like some brackets, semantic brackets, which allow it to find the meaning of what you're writing.
Yeah, but there's another semantics for how to apply a plus operator.
There are certainly various semantics, and
that
sticks to a certain one.
Getting,
yes, every particular compiler calls, of course, a particular semantics.
Yeah.
So can you just calculate this?
Maybe somebody else wants.
Come on. Just use this rules to calculate the right hand side.
Okay.
Or well, one can start with the left hand side or the right hand side. Let me just.
So could I replace the left hand side with this expression?
Yeah, sure. That's how you do it.
Okay.
So to prove the equality, you need to show that the left hand side and the right hand side are equal.
Okay. So I get for U, I get the semantics of. Yeah, what's written there? I would write this.
Yeah,
just keep writing and then just like to the right hand side. And at the right hand side, there would be the F semantics, which is like H. So it's like.
So I would try to complete it. If you, what?
Yeah, I'm just wondering if that would be correct.
That would be correct. Yes. So you can start already. So U is equal to etc.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Yes, and then you can look in this table, and this is precisely the last rule here. Right.
Okay.
You can have it if you want. or you can use your notes if you want.
Yeah, that's the view of.
Yes, precisely. Yes.
Okay.
It's not this one, right?
Oh yeah, I think this was the notion. Oh yeah, it's true. Wow. It's let.
So that's not so exactly this, because you're just rewriting what you have on your notes.
Yeah.
But
G must be like this.
No.
No.
No, G was alright.
Okay.
G is just a verbal. It can be a written name, but you apply Y to P. And in the notes, it was you had F instead.
Yeah.
So you should replace F by P.
For me, the question was I need to get this to look like the other side of the equation. Or I don't know which step I'm going to do at the next.
Oh, no, just do it step by step. You didn't finish the term, by the way. So this is left, etc.
By the way, in the notes, is it true that F can have type A to B?
Yes. I said it at the lecture, but you probably wasn't there.
Okay, so...
And I have corrected it on the web page.
So... Okay, that actually also makes
how can you compute the exponential function that is returned?
Oh, because A and B is the type of the argument, and fixed point calculates the type from A to B to A to B.
If F is actually of type A to B.
F is of A to B, yes. I mean fixed point operator goes from A to B to A to B to A to B.
Yes.
So this type is just all the same. So you can of course declare this function. Because
but in the example of the last bullet point, F has the type A to B, doesn't it have to be A to B to all?
Yes, correct. That's another mistake. But it's not in the exercise. So in exercise, of course, the type of the argument of Y has the type like C to C, where C is equal to this, and the fixed point returns C. Just encode by way C must be always a function type. But yeah, here's another mistake.
And by the way, I added, there is another one. In the clause for if, the type of the whole if expression shouldn't be pooled, it should be A.
Right. So this is okay. This was the first step. What we're doing by when you're proving an equation, we just keep transforming the left hand side. So you did one step of the transformation,
and now
we just did apply the definition, right?
Yeah.
We need a bit more than just the definition here. And what's the idea? Can someone tell?
Maybe we put this into this equation, into G, and then mu would be...
Can someone tell except Hans Petter, who invested 2 days into this exercise? No idea?
Not really, but it's something that I'm not really sure about.
I mean, the right-hand side is more complex than the left-hand side because we unfolded our fixed point ones. As we discussed, the intuition is that we execute one iteration of this loop. And if we want to capture this, we need to do the same with our term. So we've got a fixed point, which is mu. So we just need to make use of the fact that it's a fixed point. Fixed point means that we can apply the argument to mu, and this is equal to mu. And by definition, mu of f is equal to f of mu f. Right? Because mu is a fixed point. Fixed point means if you apply the function sends it to itself. So if you apply it to the argument, then you obtain it again. That's the property that we use. We need to use it. We need to use here. Because this cycle which we want to obtain suggests that we want to unfold it. So I would propose that now you write the right hand side again.
Okay.
So look how you prove the identities. If you want to prove that u is equal to v, then you do it like this.
U is equal to,
etc. until you reach v.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing.
So okay, so we do it this way.
Rewrite it over using this law.
Okay.
And mind you can use
so this is G, so
what I can use, what is the power like this? So yes. we can have a notation for it. That's U.
But there's an A, but yeah.
Well,
A
might
be
because
the
same
as the yeah, it's okay, yeah.
No, the type must match, so that's a mistake which I corrected. So of course
okay.
Yeah. Of course, the things which you operate with, they must be consistent. If you have this type here, you must have it here. It would make sense to use different type for different things. So this is actually your U. So on the next iteration, you can write U to make it shorter.
I'm not sure if the rule is actually correctly applied, because if I read this correctly, there shouldn't be a Y combinator inside these matrix brackets.
I mean, what Y is there, and U, G should be H or something.
Ah, okay. Right, so where did you get the rule? So this was just P.
It was F.
So you start with this Y of F. And then you have G gets F. So
yeah.
why you have Y?
Because instead of F there's right P.
No, instead of F there is P. So there is Y on the left hand side and not Y on the right hand side.
Then
so that must be P here.
Okay, then I got this. Then this is from Q.
No, that the left hand side correct, right hand
okay.
side, yes. So here you've got
I should use my folder.
And the type will be like this.
Yeah, because this is the same.
Because types are keep always the same. Once you type an expression, the type types won't be consistent everywhere.
Okay, so you can write.
So can you fix the type?
Fix?
Yes, you can.
And also this is okay.
Yes, perfect.
Okay, yeah.
And now we can use the notation, right? So this is H.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
So at the next line
equals H.
No.
Mu H.
At the next line, you just write it again, but instead of this thing, you just can use H, because H is a shortening.
Okay.
You don't need to rewrite this expression because this is just an alias for it. You can't just use ancient.
Yeah, that's true, but my idea was to put this H into this expression. Okay. Then I need to root for.
No, as I said, you just rewrite it, use H instead of the term. And apply that identity for the fixed points. Yes. And there's this equation mu f equal to f mu f. You see?
Oh, yeah.
So if you can apply it here, because you've got mu of g star.
Yeah.
So instead of f, you use the g star.
Yeah.
No, this is not it.
But it's exactly the same language.
Ah, okay, so there's no mu because I see some strange
lines. Yeah, sorry.
Okay. Yes, this is alright.
And
okay.
How does this help me?
This helps you quite a lot because now you
this
can.
This kind of looks like the definite side, but.
Well, we are getting there.
The right method.
So there's the star. And we've got, remember that this left constructor was introduced as syntactic sugar for the star. Do you remember how I introduced that?
Yeah. If I can just write it down for a minute. I hope that I didn't
mention. There's X instead of
X, P, Q, M. Like this.
Yes, this is correct.
So
this is correct. So, and now what I propose you to do is to use this identity in the opposite way, from right to left. Because you see, there is this last expression, g star, mu, g star. It looks very much like this right hand side.
So
you can, so you can introduce yet another left using this identity from right to left.
Okay.
Yes?
Yeah.
Yes.
We can call it X. No, X is G.
That doesn't is not a long-form term. So let always starts with a verb. So you need a verb.
And I can invent a new one.
Sure.
Feel free to. Let's call it X.
We can call it X.
And this very helpful is the restart.
So now you what? Now you use P. So P is the one which was after the start. And in our case, yes. Yes, very good.
And in the
yeah, in it.
In
so now what we're expecting here is a lambda x cubed. And so what we have there is g star, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's just lambda which allows you to form a function from a term, but we already have a function. So basically, you need to find out a particular q here. If your q was something like qx, then this q would be also qx, and this thing would be just q. So now you can match this right hand side. So assuming that the thing in the bracket is q, which is this thing,
yeah.
You write it to this thing, qx.
I just had it in my head and now it.
I mean, okay, let's start from the beginning. So
you had
this equation which is completely correct. But you cannot mesh this term with your term, because here you expect a lambda, and here you do not have lambda. But that's not a problem, because you always can bring a function to this form, because mu g star is just equal to lambda x mu g star x. So this is an iterable. I've showed it once. So because if you have a function, you can always, it's always equal to this.
Yeah.
It says that you create an argument and apply this function to this argument. So it's not of this form, but of lambda form. But you can rewrite it so it could be one more iteration which you could do in this computation. So that this thing comes to the form where you can apply this identity.
Okay. And by the way, I think some of the confusion may come from the fact that this lambda is actually not from our language, but from the semantic domain.
Yes, but this is how it is, yes.
Yeah, sure, but there you can do iterative reduction, and often iterative reduction is not considered part of the theory.
Yeah, I've told about this, but I mean, this is how the life is. So we've got the same syntax for the semantics and for the language. So it's the same thing here. If you write x plus y, then this plus is just a symbol. But the plus after the brackets is the real plus of natural numbers, and the same thing with lambda. So the lambda inside of the brackets is just a symbol. But here we are on the semantic level, so we are in the language of CPOs, where you can use lambda and all the identities about lambda, like this iterable.
Ah, okay.
So that's precisely because of this bracket. So what is in brackets, you need to be careful about, because these are just texts, essentially. And the semantics precisely relates it to the meaning. But now our computations here are semantic computations. They are about normal functions and about normal normal use of lambda and things.
Okay. And the name of the function is bg. No.
G. So g is just a name. You can use it whatever name. So could you just for the sake of clarity apply this argument of mine? So just to write this this equation so that we get this lambda and we can invert it here. So it's,
can I just write it out?
No more, just add a new line. Remember, we keep rewriting our expression. So I just want yet another iteration. Yes. Okay, so we are now in the form where we can use it, right? Because previously it was stuck here, and now it's fine. Now you can really use it.
And equals to less. In
yes.
G star, which can be written less.
No, sorry, I was wrong. Yes. I suggested you. So we need to get the lambda at the second, at the first argument.
And
so
this
we have to write the g in such a way.
Yeah, but we can use for this. We can use now.
No. I mean that was wrong. That we get the lambda here. We had to get the lambda here.
Yeah.
So can you fix that? Yes, but I need to have more brackets. Yes.
Yeah.
Not here. Very beginning and after G star.
Oh yeah, because we apply X to the one.
No, after the first G star.
Why?
Well, because originally G star was a function, and you could
use this argument of the function.
Yes,
yes.
Just writing the function.
Yeah. Okay.
And there is the X missing.
But I thought you put this. Oh yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. write down again.
Yeah, if you write down again, it's better.
Yeah.
Every iteration is better than the previous one.
I.
Now you.
G. I insert this for X.
Yes, yes.
So, this
so now you can use this word.
And now, so this should be like Q, and so this here Q right here. And
yes, correct.
And this is the same like P, which.
Ooh. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So we can now look at the original equation and see how far it is from it.
And the original equation.
Can you pull it down a bit?
Yeah. Is there?
So F gets.
And G is the same like F is. the last term looks kind of like this. But there's a sum which isn't there.
Yeah, we just need to use this. Okay, we can basically stop here, and we can just rewrite the right hand side.
Okay, so we would try to.
Yeah, we can write transform the right hand side and try to see if we get the same thing.
For you, we wrote before. Okay, maybe we need to try do it step by step. The right-hand side looks like let f, no.
Yes?
This was the thing you wanted to prove.
Yes, exactly. So we transformed the left-hand side, so let's start to transform the right-hand side.
F, and what? F, we insert h in that. It's kind of only apply h to you because this. I have no idea where to start because I could try to replace this and I could try to replace this, or I could try to replace the f with.
So we okay. We need this new gen star, right?
Yeah.
So and where it's hidden? It's hidden in this matrix of y, which is u. So I would basically apply the definition of the semantics of y to u. Just like we did before.
So this should be U, I mean. Yeah, this is the same like U. And we know that we can replace U with this, for example. Because this was you when we did this transformation of the left hand side, we got this expression for you.
Yes, so what I propose is you use this expression again, you replace your you with this expression.
Yeah, but with which one? I could use this or this.
There are actually one.
I want to replace the U in the expression,
yes.
The U right there, yes. With one of these expressions in the
information. With that one, which you just pointed out.
This.
The right one.
This.
Yes.
Okay. I don't see how this helps. Maybe I write it down.
So I would add brackets. Oh well, okay. Yes.
And
now g gets this thing, but for that thing we have a name again, right?
which thing?
Well, G
gets this thing.
Yes, but it has a name, right?
And this is called page, so it's U page.
Yes. It was let G.
Oh, okay, yeah. I thought you can already replace that. Let G.
Yes, H.
And U G.
So okay. And now this looks like an application of an associativity law, right?
Didn't there one leg more? Yes.
One, two, three. There are the three legs. Yeah, okay.
Two.
Yes,
but the same.
But you can apply the associativity law to this part.
Which line is this?
I mean, when you write let something in, so you can consider this as an isolated expression, and you can apply the associativity inside of it.
Okay, so I can use this rule to transform.
No, this is not going to help. There's an associativity law. So I gave it in the lecture, the associativity law for let. Don't you remember?
No. Does anybody of you know that?
No.
Absolutely.
Which expression do you want to transform?
You want to transform this into something that hopefully looks like this.
Okay.
So I'm saying that one can use the associativity law. So you know what this is?
You can let G get H in that let X get.
By the way, you didn't finish it, so there's also in. In FX.
And okay, then I guess you can.
Can you please place this H from?
So the outer let remains untouched, and then in let X gets. In let G gets H, in let X gets mu G star in F of X. Should be the movement.
I don't see.
So you want to transform this expression?
Yeah.
So you only want to transform this part so this one remains untouched.
Yeah.
So just start writing it down, and we'll suggest you the rest.
Is there some more chalk? Mm-hmm. Oh. Okay.
So this associativity law says that you get let G gets H,
she gets H.
Yes.
So, but only in this expression, I guess. And look.
G gets H. And just, you're just writing it,
right?
No, no, the, that's not like this. It's really G gets H. I promise you.
Okay.
N, X gets mu G, sorry.
And isn't that a bad missing or no?
In, yeah, in left.
Yeah. X gets mu G star.
Yeah. That's called associativity. That's a law which I showed at the at lecture, which says that if you've got these two prefixes like G gets H and then X gets mu G star, then you can rearrange them. So you can first, well, anyway, at every.
Apply it.
If you compare these two things, this you obtain by grouping. So you first, in both occasions, you first run this assignment.
Yeah. So,
but yes.
Swapping.
Yes, it's swapping.
Okay. And how does this call that? Okay,
and here we are nearly done, right? Because what? Because we look, we bind, we run H twice, and we in one occasion we bind it to F, and in the other one occasion we bind it to G.
So I just bind it to G.
So, and I claim that this is equal to just let F gets. F gets H in
okay, you can also call it F. I just
or G,
want
yes.
To write like this
yes. Now. So you can use alpha conversion here.
But there's no star.
There is no what? There is no star.
No star.
Yes, I think we messed it up. So at the left hand side there also should be a star.
The left hand side should be. So wait. That happened.
Well, because we have it. I think. Okay. So first of all. I think we really should have transformed it like this, right? So you apply the beta law inside of the star, and then it would match, and this star would go. So there's no star here. I need to just compare it to that equation that it would happen.
So if you start something twice, the star.
It's just by definition of left.
Yeah, you start. If you have something, star, it's like no star.
I don't understand. So there was a star on the right, and there is no star on the left. Therefore, here it should function the same.
Yes.
So this star, which was here, it's not there anymore, according to this rule. Because this star
oh, okay.
Is not occurring at Q.
Yeah.
Of course, okay. If this expression P contained another star, it would be preserved because it would stay part of P,
yeah.
Just like okay. Just for the same reason.
Okay.
So okay, the only step here. Can sit down. So the step which we have used here is the point of this exercise. I mean, other transformation, they are just by definition. And, like your robot, you apply the rules from the charts. So this is the. I didn't know that. So difficult. I can reduce the. It's not my interest to torture you. And you want to learn this now. But in a relative dimension, that's the creative part of this exercise. Okay. Let's agree that the exercise was difficult, so and that part was difficult, but that was the most difficult part because it would require a new law, right? Because there's nothing justifying this equation which you can just take ready from the lecture. That's why I wrote as a hint, consider developing a new law for that, and this is exactly an instance of. So, to me, it's intuitively clear, but of course, my intuition goes too far. So the point is, if you're running the same program twice, then you get the same result. So if it diverges, then it would diverge in the first place, and if it doesn't diverge, then the result would agree. So that's essentially this law. X gets F in Y gets G in let's say P and Q. In say R equal to that. In R, where in R I replace Y by X.
But there's one left missing after those. No. Oh yeah, you mean the
yes.
So my person of taking this is proving this law is actually easier than the rest because I have an intuition for it. I see it and know how to do it only by pattern analysis of if it diverges,
yes,
then
yes.
It does. So I know how to do it. I know what I have to look up and what needs to be done. The problem with this is that these definitions are scattered all over the script and I didn't really have an intuition for example, star and the related concepts. So it takes a bit of time going through all that and actually knowing what you're doing if you replace, for example, the left by the standard. And so on.
All right.
I have another question. There's such a let expression. And I think you did at the beginning where we said let u equals to. Oh, okay, no, sorry. I was wondering why we just replaced u by the other expression, but the let at the top isn't a let expression, only a mathematical let.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, is it Q? to your knowledge is. Yeah, maybe we should organize the exercise differently.
Yeah, I think for me it's because I haven't yet theoretical programming yet. So all
I mean it's just difficult to find out something simpler to me because here we it was like an exercise because we're improving some sensible property. Of course it could just give some small thing, but then I wanted to appeal to the intuition a bit, and that the identity which I gave in the beginning, it makes sense. I expect that it would also make sense to you because this is some logical property. If I give you some shorter thing, it can be simpler, but the intuition will be. I mean, it would not be some sensible property. So, when one gets this thing, one proves something in something sensible. Yeah, okay. Alright, so we have to practice. Practice it by small examples.
Also, I mean, this wasn't that much to do, but I think the first exercise of the third one.
First exercise of the third one.
That actually required a lot more stuff, or I didn't see anything. I don't think I can do that. So you required to prove the knowledge of
yes.
And well, there are three of them. One which
so
is
we can stick to the one where we have troubles.
Okay, but I don't know.
Do you want to see this on the blackboard in 10 minutes?
Well. Let's start. I don't know. We should use the time anyway. I mean, if there is a trouble, we should discuss it. Maybe we skip some steps. Yeah.
So we have to prove that this law holds for our monoid modules. Where the definition of star was given as, I just expanded that one step. Multiplication times identity times alpha times identity times. So, this is the thing under the star, which appears in this place, and the rest is the definition of star.
Yes.
Okay, so now we can go on transforming this thing. I mean, if you want to get to this, we need to somehow get these pieces for G. If I write that in another way. So the proof should magically let the star disappear here and let these two functions disappear here somehow. Then chase them. Okay, so what I
the most difficult part, am I right? I mean, out of the three walls, this is the most wall. And the other ones were...
The other ones were okay. I mean, it's not pretty to use this point three equation reasoning, but it checks out. I mean, didn't take that long.
Did you try to prove it by diagrams?
Yeah, I could have. But the problem here is that you do have commutative diagrams for, say, A, types A and B, but you need to you need them in a diagram for, say, C times A and C times B. The problem for me was that I had commutative diagrams for the individual factors of products, but not for the whole product. I mean, if you look at the diagrams here, so these are products with three types, and in the equation we have products with four types, differently predecessed. And I didn't quite know how to apply this in the case.
Yeah, well, so this definition of F star, it features alpha. And you get a diagram for alpha. So I need to just try to extend this diagram with this markers on the left and on the right and see what happens.
Okay.
That would give you F star. Ah, okay. And then the same way you would get G star. So basically, one can try to come up with a long diagram. So you extend this diagram this and then create yet another instance for G and stitch them together.
Yes, but the
and then something would happen. Yeah.
That works for this case. I mean that's
the right answer to this
you're proposing. But for the joint nested.
The left hand side so straightforwardly. So I don't know if it's a correct strategy, but this is what I would try. So basically, you start from the right hand side, for which you at least have some idea, and see where it goes. So to me, at least there are diagrams for the left hand side, which may at least produce something useful, which you can use. Maybe so much time we have only 2 minutes. 5 minutes, maybe I just try it. So I don't know what is it. Makes any sense? So the problem here is so you managed to finish your calculation, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so but the question is how to present that concisely, how to save on this routine work.
I think the rewritings were also not that easy because you have all kinds of nested alpha morphisms inside of products. And you need to get them out somewhere.
Yeah. So what we've got D minus F, which goes from M times X to M times Y. And then, no. u gets m times y, and here we apply situativity, so we get m times y, and then we apply star times a, so we get m times y, and there is, okay, we do not have a diagram here. We do not have a diagram. So what my idea was, so this is our F star, and I wanted to add G star on the right hand side, which would have the same form, but I can put it here. So this would be m times m z, and so on. Yeah. So and then my idea would be to transform the diagrams, but I mean this is how I would do it. Maybe I do it for the next time show. I mean we do not have time anymore. Next time is what? Next time is here.
I don't think on Wednesday. We go on Tuesday.
Tuesday is off, and then we meet on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And then in a week, I will be absent. So basically, we meet then. I don't know. I mean, I sent, well, Thorsten, I wanted to send another guy, Christopher.
Yeah.